Item one, Chairman's notices. Those are listed over leaf. Apologies for absence.
Yes, Chairman, apologies received from Councillor Archer and Councillor Miss Lewis. And Councillor Bamford is tending as substitute for Councillor Miss Lewis. And Councillor Durham is tending as substitute for Councillor Archer.
Okay, minutes of the last meeting. Okay, disclosures of interest. To disclose the existence and nature of any disclosable pecuniary interest, other pecuniary interest, or non-pecuniary interest relating to items of business on the agenda. Having regard to paragraph 6 to 8, inclusive of the Code of Conduct for Members, I declare my directorship of Goldman Sachs, which means that I will stand down for item 9, and Councillor Dobson will take that item. Any others? No? Okay. Public participation, there is none. Chairman's good news announcements, there is none. And item number 7, well, there's good news, but they're just we're not including it in that section of the agenda, which is good news in and of itself. Item 7, supplementary estimates and environments.
Thank you, Chair. Page 147, agenda item 7, there are no supplementary estimates, but there are 2 environments since the previous meeting. These are capital requirements. So to explain the situation, there were capital budgets in place for Prom Park Road repairs, the Burnham Cemetery roadway, and all-weather car parking improvements on the Prom. Those 3 items were all tendered, and whilst they are all within the cash envelope, there is a saving in effect on the Prom Park Road repairs, and a larger cost on the all-weather car parking. So this is requesting what's not spent in one to be moved over to the other. This shouldn't happen in future because any significant capital expenditure will require a proper estimate or quote before it gets approved the year before as part of the capital budget. So that's that piece. There are 2 procurement exemptions reported here as well. The Council is currently in the process of implementing a direct payment system for the green waste subscriptions, which will enable the individual to purchase the green waste online and for that information to go directly to Suez, the green waste collector. At the moment, it's a largely complicated and manual basis where the money comes in. It then has to be matched onto a further spreadsheet, and then that information is then sent over to Suez, which is quite a long procedure. And there were a number of issues this time last year when that was happening. So a procurement exemption has been approved for £9,532.50. The second procurement exemption is for a compliant housing management system, which will enable us to deal with the new burdens associated with the Homeless Reduction Act. This is funded by our Homeless Reduction Act New Burdens funding, and the reason we've done a procurement exemption is because software providers have only just launched very soon before the requirement the updated software, and this is the one which is recommended by the Ministry. So this is the CLG recommended product.
Members, are those environments and procurement exemptions noted? Any comments? Agreed. Okay, thank you. On to the next item, the pay policy statement, the annual review.
Which page? 151. This is 151. So, again, a standard document. This is an updated document from last year. We do it every year. The only change from last year is that when you look at the pay bands, when it quotes pay band A within the document, that was uplifted for last year's annual pay increase. I'm happy to take any questions, but as I say, standard document.
Councillor Flukar.
Shame not to. Page 155, 2.4.1. This is in relation to the Chief Executive performing the duties of the returning officer. Perhaps the 151 officer could confirm. I mean, the Chief Executive doesn't have to be the returning officer, but the Chief Executive is paid a fee for this, which I understand is not paid for by Morden District Council directly. Does the Chief Executive therefore take that time off from Morden District Council, or does she get paid twice for the service? And if so, are we being taxed for her performing the duties of the returning officer rather than the duties of Chief Executive? And if my memory serves me right, Miss Foy, I think you were the acting deputy, or you were the deputy returning officer, and I know you did an enormous amount of work, and I wondered if you were paid for that separately to your normal day job, or you had to do it twice, because you're nodding your head, and I think it does say somewhere on this report, Chairman, that the only exception to members of staff receiving fees, allowances, benefits in kind and expenses is in fact the chief executive. So maybe the 151 might address that in a future report. But I'm interested in this double payment, Chairman, because we do live in quite austere times, and I'd like to be paid twice, and I'm sure you feel as though you do most days.
Miss Foy.
Okay, so the first point to make is correct, the chief executive receives a separate amount, I believe, and I believe in the region of about £4,000 to £5,000 for a general election that is funded by the Electoral Commission, and that's the highest amount which is payable by the Electoral Commission, and that's also pensionable as well. So there's a pension contribution made on that, which is paid for and claimed back through the Electoral Commission. In terms of so it could be argued that for any time that she's fulfilling that role within the normal standard hours leading up to the election, that she is paid for both roles. That is the same for deputy returning officers, and also for any... And presiding officers are also paid for separately, as are poll clerks and counters. But generally, in terms of counters, that's in extra time. They don't claim time in lieu as well as turning up for the count at 9 p.m. However, I'm happy to bring a report back for clarification of the different roles, the different payments and values, and what those individual terms and conditions are.
But allow me to come back to you, and I mean, and also for clarity. But my understanding is the chief executive is not the returning officer by default, and that we could appoint an independent returning officer. And I feel that based on what you've just said, that would actually present excellent value. But I'll give way to the chairman.
I was simply going to say we had considered this one occasion before, and as I recall, on that occasion we were told that actually it was part of the chief executive's contract that she would get these payments and that she would be the returning officer. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what I recall being the case. And if it is, then it's something that we may not be able to resolve until we get until we have a new chief executive and a new contract, and so we may be stuck with the situation for now. But look, I mean, I think I agree, Councillor Fluker, that it makes sense that if someone's spending a lot of their time on a particular role, I mean, it's one thing if you're doing something different, you know, that takes a couple of hours a week or something, and you're getting paid in the evening or something like that, as you know, some members are here or whatever. But actually, if it's actually stopping you from doing your main role, which presumably it must be in the actual run-up to the election, then there is a question over whether a person can do those two things and whether they should essentially be paid twice for that. Councillor Durham.
Just a question. Ms. Foy mentioned that it was for general elections. What is the situation on local elections then?
I think there's a smaller payment.
Yes, it's the same. It's a smaller payment. So the payment is determined by, be it a local election with parishes, the combined election. There's set rates depending on the size of the election.
Yes, Councillor Shrimpton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I was at the last election, I noticed that a lot of the councillors seemed to be members of this district council, not the councillors, but the NGOs, and I wondered whether this could be expanded so that people who weren't officers of the council could have the job of doing it, because it's a paid job.
You mean as counters or actually in the polling station? Sorry, both of the above.
I've just noticed the counters.
Okay.
I was there.
But officers rather than members, okay.
Yes, officers rather than members.
Ms. Foy?
I thought it'd be nice if the people who were, say, unemployed got the job, because a little bit of extra money might come in useful. And as we were there almost all night last time, I'm sure that some of those weren't able to do a day's work the day after.
I think that it's a very good point, because historically we have struggled to get enough people for polling stations and for count. And especially for a combined count, you don't really want the same people at the count that have been on a polling station since 6 a.m, because they are very tired already, having had another responsible role all day. I think the answer to this really is to get... We know when our elections are, and I think the answer really is to get our advertisements out as soon as possible, to get a pool of people that we can train up and we can call on for the local election in May 19.
Councillor Durham.
Well, I know we're sort of getting off subject a little bit, but quite a few authorities at general elections use school kids, over 18 school kids, because they're the ones that run to, so they get the first declaration. So perhaps that's something we could work with the schools over.
Okay, so I think Ms. Foy, maybe we can come back at the next meeting around the Chief Executive's contract and whether or not this is part of that. But in relation to the pay policy more generally, is that agreed? Okay, thank you, members. In that case, we're on to item 9, so I'll stand down for the Vice Chairman.
159.
He just stirred.
He's got his iPad. Look, he's on iPad.
Okay, Treasury report. Over to Ms. Foy.
Thank you. So, agenda item 9, page 159. This is the annual investment strategy and prudential indicators. This report essentially came to the committee before Christmas, but the process is that for additional scrutiny, after it's been through here, it then goes to the overview and scrutiny committee to bring back any recommendations to this committee before the final recommendation to council. There's only one difference from the report in terms of the content and what was coming before Christmas is that we have now included the prudential indicators in Appendix 3 on page 209 onwards. When it went to Overview and Scrutiny Committee, they did not have any specific areas, queries or recommendations that they wished for this committee to look into, and felt that this committee had the expertise to exercise their own due scrutiny over this item.
Any questions before we recommend it to council? Fine, thank you. I shall get council's.
You're on paperless as well, aren't you?
Teaching
me how to
use the iPad. And then
I've got to send this again in the post. You say that. Okay. Item 10, financial services policy, mileage and expenses, page 211.
Councillor
Fluke's benefit.
So, the mileage policy has been updated for the following changes. There was reference to fuel cards in there, but we haven't had fuel cards for about 5 years, so that's been taken out. Job titles have been changed to reflect the new structure. There is an additional requirement to ensure that where officers are using pay and display or paid parking, that they're considering best value rather than parking in the most expensive car park available. They're considering that and distance, etc. We've uplifted the subsistence amounts so that they are equal to the HMRC rates, and there have been some small typographical changes where there was still reference to the inland revenue and not HMRC. In terms of the form that people are using, we've also, which isn't in this document but it's just really for noting, we are also since last April making sure that officers put in the postcodes so that there's a better audit trail in terms of making sure that the mileage recorded can be verified back in this correct amount.
Councillor Fuca.
I was just thinking, I mean, obviously I agree with all this, but when we actually go through the revision of this, 8.1, I think we should also sort of work out what we're going to do with kilowatts, because I'm thinking about changing my motor carriage at the moment, and I'm looking towards an electric car, because I rather like the idea of charging up outside during the meeting and charging 45p a mile. Nothing tempts me to come on my bicycle at 11p a mile, but I think we should
20p?
Try...
20p? 20p on a bike?
20p? Yes. Well, I could go one way. but I do think we need to align this, because we've got electric charging points, yep. And it surprises me that we don't have any staff with electric vehicles, but it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think we should, but yeah.
So for the mileage rates for electric vehicles?
Yeah.
There will be.
With that comment, any other comments, members? Is that agreed? We're on to the next item, Councillor Shimpton, but I'm sure if it's a very exciting comment, we can hear it in relation to information and data security policy, item 11, page 223.
Thank you. So here we've got three IT policies for approval. They are the conditions of acceptable use, the corporate information security policy, and the using email and digital comms policy. We adopt the Essex Online Partnership policies, and that's the partnership that we are part of along with the other Essex districts. They're used across all Essex District Councils. Essentially, they've been revised to make sure that they are up to date in terms of cybersecurity requirements, but also in line with GDPR requirements as well.
Members, any comments, or are those is that recommendation made? Councillor Durham.
Well, I note with interest under Appendix A.
Okay, is that agreed? Item 12, the Data Protection Policy 2018, page 235.
It's okay, I was just scrolling down. Agenda item 12, revised data protection policy for GDPR. It's been updated for the changes in legislation according to the ICO guidance, which has just been released. It's a shorter and a bit easier to follow than the previous policy. I'm happy to take any questions. The content is similar other than the updates for GDPR.
Members, Councillor Bamford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, this is quite controversial, this policy, and a lot of the parishes have had a lot of problems with this data protection. And I'm hoping that this council would help them as much as possible. I'm sure you have already been. I just wondered if it was too soon, because I thought there was a lot of unanswered questions still about this. But you seem to have got the policy already done. So is that likely to change again?
No, we were waiting. Full implementation is by the 26th of May. And that is full implementation or fine. And the ICO released the revised guidance in the first week back after Christmas. So this policy has taken that into consideration. In terms of the parishes, yes, we are supporting them. There was a parish clerks forum today at which our GDPR contract implementation person was there and did a presentation. Parishes have, I think, nearly all bar one been on the NALC training as well. There is also another session at the Denji 100 next Denji 100 meeting as well. So we are offering support. One of their main issues is that there's two key roles. You have to have a data protection officer and you have to have a senior information officer in place, and the clerk cannot be both of those. So for the majority of parishes that they've only got one clerk, one employee, it gives them a really difficult position. So what we're looking at doing is really providing advice to be able to charge them for the data protection officer service, and then they've complied with the GDPR. But that's another report to come to the next meeting.
Yes, by all means.
Just
Chairman. On page 241, it does say all council employees and members will be provided with a copy of the policy and with appropriate training. So I just wondered whether we as members are going to have a seminar on this, and presumably we will get a copy of the policy sent separately on email, everybody, or how would that happen? Yeah, I know, but this is only our...
So there's a briefing note that's going out this week, and at the last meeting of this committee, there was a discussion on whether we set up seminars and workshops, or actually whether we send the briefing note first. There is also online training for members, which will be launched at the end of March as well. So we've got briefing note. This policy will be sent out after it's approved. And then also we've got the online training. And then if there is a requirement still after that, then yes, we can do seminars. But I know that at the previous meeting, members of this committee suggested that to do a briefing note first.
Councillor Bamford.
The point on that same page, and it sort of relates to the next item. At the bottom, it says any breach of security should be reported to the Executive Director, Legal and Democratic Services. In the report that you've got next, which I accept is an internal document, it doesn't say Executive Director, and I'm assuming it should either be the independent... I forget what you call it, an ICP or something in the next thing.
On page 241, that should, any breaches of security should be reported to the Senior Information Reporting Officer, and that should be the same in both policies. So it may be that,
so you need
subject
to
those,
that.
We need to change that. Yeah.
Clarity, who
Councilor
is that?
Fluker.
The Senior Information Reporting. That is the 151 officer, is it? Okay. And I was just going to add, Chairman, I know you're keen to move on, but... I know one of the clerks who attended today's briefing, she contacted me and she said it was very informative and very well done. But I also know that Essex Association are also rolling out training, and that's been very well received because it's on a Saturday morning. So, Chairman, if it helps you, I propose that we agree the recommendation to Council.
Subject to that small change.
And look forward to this being another regulatory area that we can hopefully diverge from once we leave the European Union. Okay, is that agreed, members? Thank you. Item 13, Information Security Data Breach Incident Reporting Management Policy, pages 243 to 252.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So, again, these are updates to policies required so that we are compliant with GDPR. The key change that we're going to get in terms of reporting any data breaches is that... there is a requirement for their 151 officer or information reporting officer to report all incidents within 72 hours of becoming aware, and that wasn't in place before. So that's the key change, and these ones again have been developed with the other districts as part of the Essex Online Partnership.
Members, any questions on that? Councillor Bamford again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think this has got page numbers, is it? 248, is it? Under ICT Security Breach Protocol. I mean, as this is an internal document, and I think Councillor Fluke already raised it, should we not just say there exactly who the ICT manager is and the data protection officer? Should we not change that to 151 officer or make it clear who that person is, because we don't really know who they are.
Yeah, we can highlight that before it goes to full council.
Thank you.
Okay, otherwise that agreed? Yes. With that change, thank you. Item 14, any other items of business that are urgent? There are none, so I declare the meeting closed at 5 to 8. Well done.